It seems the whole jazz world is talking about Evan Harris. The precociously talented saxophonist has taken the fiercely competitive New York jazz scene by storm since moving over to study at the famed Juilliard School 2 years ago. And in his fledgling career has already played alongside icons such as Wynton Marsalis and Miguel Zenon. Evan Harris is back in Australia as part of a national tour to promote his Bell Award-nominated debut album, Skylines. Evan Harris, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks, Frank.
Evan, how did music find you? Tell us how you were introduced to jazz and how you became anchored in this music we call jazz.
I think it started from a very young age. My parents had a great jazz record collection, so I think I just grew up listening to Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and Vince Jones and Emma Pasch. While I didn't begin playing jazz immediately, I started on classical flute, and then at about the age of, say, 12, I thought that the school big band looked like a lot of fun and sounded like a lot of fun. So I took up the saxophone, and I guess that was it.
Why do you think the tenor saxophone continues to be such an attractive instrument? Why do you think that is?
I don't know specifically what it is that attracts everyone, but for me, it certainly just has a very, very vocal sound to it. Some people have said that it has to do with the range of your speaking voice. So I think perhaps my speaking voice is, you know, similar in pitch to the tenor saxophone. I don't know if that's true or not. You can be the judge of that.
Well, who do you count as your main influences and how have they informed your music, especially on this album, Skylines?
I think my first influence on the tenor saxophone was the Australian tenor saxophone player Dale Barlow. And in fact, they say 20/20 hindsight, even just like listening back to Resignation just then, which I haven't listened to in, you know, a little while, I can hear little glimpses of things that I've picked up from Dale. So that's interesting to note. I think currently, though, I'm very into this saxophone player called Chris Cheek, who's a New York-based saxophone player. And I also really like Seamus Blake, who's originally Canadian, lived in New York for many, many years and seems to be living in Paris, as far as I can tell from social media.
This album is very personal in terms of your original music, and it's really a document of your 2 years, or certainly at the time, probably 12 months or so, living in New York City. You're obviously thriving there as well. Can you tell us in particular, though, how you approached composing the three pieces that really form the title Skylines? They're Skyline at Sunrise, Skyline at Midday, and then Skyline at Sunset, because these three pieces really evoke those three ideas. How did you come to compose those?
Well, firstly, thanks. I'm glad that you can hear some sort of semblance of a theme throughout. It's actually just the one composition, but played with three different approaches. So the composition itself is kind of a musical impression of the view from my bedroom window, which at the time was in Midtown Manhattan, and it looked northwest over the Hudson River and had this incredible view of three or four particularly jagged buildings that comprise, you know, the skyline at my window. So basically, Skyline at Sunset is an impression of it as the sun rises. My bed faced toward the sunrise, so I kind of woke up with this incredible orange vista. Skyline at midday is obviously when the sun's, you know, at its highest. The city's just bustling, and it's incredible to watch. And then sunset, you feel this tranquility kind of setting over the scene, and it was very beautiful.
And certainly the way you've described that there, listening to the album again last night, you really have sort of captured those feelings in those three pieces. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, I noticed on a technical side of things, the recording was made at 96 kilohertz at Systems 2 Studios in Brooklyn. Now, in layman's terms, what difference does that make to the quality of the sound coming out from our listeners' speakers?
Well, it's just a higher fidelity, I suppose. So you hear more subtlety and more nuance, I would hope. It's kind of like the difference between looking at an LCD screen compared to an iPhone screen. That might be a broad kind of comparison, but I think that's it in a nutshell. So you might hear, I don't know if it's absolutely discernible and that you can pinpoint an exact thing that's going to sound different, but the overall impression will be one of greater clarity.
Are you finding that is an innovation now in recent times for recording, or do you feel as though this is a one-off that you've stepped out a little?
I don't know if it's a one-off. I imagine if I were to make another album at Systems 2, it would also be in 96 kilohertz. Although I do have to add that it sadly shut down only maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago. They closed its doors after 30 or so years.
I was going to ask you what are the big issues for jazz musicians that you're up against in New York, and clearly that is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd imagine the cost of recording in New York City wouldn't be easy as well.
It's all very expensive. We certainly don't do it for the money.
But how did you go about choosing the musicians for this date? Will Vincent is here with you to perform tomorrow night. He obviously has a sound that is attractive for you.
Will has a long-standing relationship with Australia. He's been out more times than I can count. And so as an aspiring jazz musician growing up in Sydney, he was more or less a household name. I really like his saxophone playing. Also, incidentally, whenever I plug my phone into my car speakers, it goes by alphabetical order, so it defaults to playing one of Will's tracks called Albemarle. So I've heard him almost every car drive. As for Sean, one of my favourite albums it's called 1999, and it's also kind of a reflection of Sean moving to New York in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed fitting to have Sean on my album. I've always loved Des White's playing. He played on Mike Rivett's album Digital Seed. Amazing bass player, really lovely guy. And then lastly, Jochen Rückert, incredible drummer, was very fond of his playing on a great album with both of those favourite saxophone players that I mentioned, Chris Cheek and Seamus Blake. There's a great album called Reed's Ramble, and it's got this really light-hearted selection of music, and the two tenors play in harmonies and in unison, and it's incredible. And you may or may not notice a bit of a resemblance in approach in writing for two saxophones between Skylines and Reed's Ramble.
Probably a question that you may get asked fairly frequently, but I think it's a question that comes up ever since Miles Davis insisted that his players play what they don't know rather than what they know. So yourself, quite a thoroughly educated musician, having studied here in Sydney and also in New York, how do you forget what you've learnt when you're on the bandstand and then play what you don't know? Or is that something that you've got to learn as well?
Great question. It's really difficult because you spend an awful lot of time in a practice room playing music by yourself. And being on the bandstand, I think you really need to acknowledge the other musicians on stage. So I try to forget all the things that I've practiced, in a sense, by listening to myself last. That's kind of an aspiration of mine. And what I mean by that is, rather than thinking of it as though I'm speaking to a group of people, it's very much a conversation, and you are equally listening to each member of the band and then yourself. It's kind of like Parliament, or what Parliament should be.
Yes. So it sounds like you have a very egalitarian approach to the band.
I try to, but you know, it doesn't always quite work like that. But that's the goal, for sure.
So then how do you measure the success of a performance?
Another great question. I think I'm very satisfied with my performance if I've listened to and responded to the other musicians in a way that is kind of democratic, not to draw comparisons to politics, but to say that everyone's had an equal input. It hasn't been for flexing musical muscle. It's just been about making music with the other people on the stage.
And you're very generous with this album as well, in as far as the solo time, the arrangements allow plenty of solo time. In fact, when you put the album on, if you didn't know it was your album, it could be mistaken to say that it was Will's album.
Well, really. Thanks. That's the goal. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Very happy that you've joined us in the studio tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Skyline at midday. So I just want you to maybe walk us through this a little.
Okay. So the very first thing that you'll hear is a very jagged, angular melody. That's the crux of the composition. And if you were to visually map out the shape of that melody, it corresponds with some buildings that I would wake up to, the shape of those buildings. So you'll hear that, and then you'll hear the harmony underneath that is maintained throughout. And then there's a solo from Will Vincent, and then there's a solo from Sean Wayland, and then I take a solo, and then Jochen takes a solo. And it's all It's all loosely based around the harmony and melody that you initially hear, and then it's bookended, so you'll hear it at the very end of the track as well.
Evan Harris, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks, Frank.